one of his researchers actually, he masturbated her dolphin regularly because he had to relieve his sexual tension before they can continue with the research.
Welcome to Future Skills, where we prepare you for a future of accelerating change. I'm Ludvig Sundström.
And I'm Mikael Syding.
Today, we will talk about strategies for doing things differently. So this will be a practical episode where we talk about how to stand out from the crowd and hopefully gain an outsized return for your efforts.
And outthink your enemies.
That's maybe the most important thing. Consider everybody else an enemy.
Yeah. So the first rule of Fight Club is...
Don't talk about Fight Club.
No, I'm just kidding. But the first rule of avoiding herd mentality is to start out with the assumption that what most other people are doing is wrong.
Yeah, and it's so easy thinking that everybody else has already thought things out, that authorities like central bankers or politicians, that they have a method that works. It's easy to think that there is, that whatever I might be thinking, that everybody else is actually doing it right already.
Yeah, and I think it's a general thing that you see, just because something is done, you think that it's somehow the right thing. But compared to if it just had just remained an idea, because then you couldn't have scrutinized it.
And as a side tip to start out thinking that everybody else is wrong, you also have to be of the mindset that when you take the contrarian view, that everybody else will think that you are stupid and wrong. So you have to be prepared for that. It's not easy being a contrarian.
But when it does go right, and you see something that becomes a tremendous success, it's usually because it breaks all of these conventional rules. And a really good example of this is actually the book series and movie series Twilight, about the teenage love. I don't know what they called. It's actually a new genre now. She created a new genre, this woman, and it's called vampire romance.
And you make it sound silly, but I actually read these books even before they became movies.
Oh, wow. How did you start reading this?
I was just browsing the sci-fi and fantasy genres on my Kindle, and I was looking for things with a lot of reviews. Yeah, so I stumbled upon these things. I don't, yeah.
Anyway, this the woman who wrote these books, Stephanie Meyer. So let's look at what she did that was different, that broke these conventional rules of romance books. So instead of the traditional evil vampires, you know, the evil vampires like Dracula, her vampires instead were often like good and normal people who were compassionate and nice. And instead of when the vampires died and, you know, they flare up when the sun comes up, instead, which is the normal thing, instead of that, the vampire turns to glass.
Yeah, so rather than being evil and violent and situated in Transylvania and always being related to Vlad Dracul from Romania, she just turned everything around and made them like real softies and with stronger feelings than everybody else, stronger hunger, stronger love, stronger passion.
Yeah, it's very different. And also the kicker, I think, which is of course the forbidden love between the teenage girl and a vampire. So all the teenage women and you, Mikael, we think it's exciting.
Yeah, well, I actually think that quite a few men were intrigued as well, because they thought that, yeah, okay, if she can love a vampire, I can be a vampire.
Oh, yeah? Anyway, the moral of the story is that it really pays to break the rules sometimes. At least it did for Stephanie Meyer. And for your information, the Twilight franchise has grossed more than $3 billion. And the books have sold more than 120 million copies. That's crazy.
Yeah, so maybe we should think about doing some kind of a beast romance genre, but not vampire romance, because that everybody's doing that nowadays. There is so many TV series and books about that. But maybe dolphin romance, kind of pan-species free for all.
Yeah, we should probably quit this podcast and start writing something like that. That's where the money.
Yeah, well, I actually listened to a podcast about a researcher back in the 70s who, he took LSD and he gave LSD to the dolphins as well. And one of his researchers she masturbated her dolphin regularly because he had to relieve his sexual tension before they can continue with the research.
Oh, that's good research material for our new series then.
Yeah.
Another really good example of contrarianism, I think, is Arnold Schwarzenegger's bodybuilding career. And the reason that's interesting is because Arnold, everyone knows him for being, you know, having a big body and being a bodybuilder. But the truth is that compared to many of the other bodybuilders, Arnold didn't necessarily have the best body in terms of muscle insertions, but he had the motivation and intelligence to outthink all the other bodybuilders.
Yeah, and he definitely did not have a logical starting point or an obvious starting point for becoming a bodybuilder. What he did have was some kind of a motivation to win. But he really started out as one of the smaller kids in class. And when he came up with the idea that he would get the biggest biceps in the world, everybody was laughing at him. Because I mean, I've seen pictures of him when he was 5 years old. It's like, there's no way that guy can be like athletic.
Mm. And then if you fast forward when he started doing this, when he became a competitive bodybuilder, he still wasn't, like, there were still people with much better bodies. But he thought about it really strategically and he said, "Arnold, what can you do to be special and different?" And then he thought up a bunch of really smart things. And he started taking ballet courses to, like, move better on stage because he knew that this was the last thing that people, especially the judges, would expect from a big guy like him, to be graceful like a cat.
And that's truly out of the box, because who among the other bodybuilders whose interests lie in pumping iron and being big and being like manly, who would ever come to think of taking ballet courses to move graciously?
Yeah, it's a bit of a sidetrack, but Jean-Claude Van Damme also took ballet.
One of his shticks is the doing the side splits.
Right.
And I guess it comes from there rather than from his actual martial arts training. Well, who knows?
Moving on, another thing that Arnold did to differentiate himself even further was that he would be really meticulous when he studied his competitors before each competition. He would look at the people he was facing and then he would look at their best body parts and he would see, like, okay, this guy, he's too big. I can't compete on him with the back. This guy, I can't compete on him with the biceps and so forth. And then what he did was he tried to emphasize the body parts that the other people in the competition didn't have. Extra.
I think a lot of people have the mental model that you're supposed to study your competitors, or if you have an idea, you're supposed to study the contrarian idea. But I think most people just pay lip service to this method and don't really take the consequences. Like what you just said, I study my competitors, but most would just let that lead them to, all right, he has a really big biceps, so I need to train biceps more.
Right.
But he instead thinks he has a really big biceps, so I'll expose my triceps, and he shows his biceps slowly, so I'll show my triceps three times really quickly. Like that's really contrarian thinking and a way of studying your competitors and drawing conclusions and actually doing something about it. Whereas I think a lot of people they understand the importance of studying the opposite, but not really doing anything about it.
Being different was right up my alley. I didn't have the same body as everyone else, and I didn't have the same car as everyone else. I always wanted to be different.
So the first rule was to start out with the assumption that what most people are doing is wrong. And now for the second rule of avoiding herd mentality. And that is that before you can become a quote unquote real contrarian, you need to practice being one in small things first.
Oh yeah, great idea. Because it feels uncomfortable for most. And I mean, if it doesn't, if you are a truly inborn contrarian, that's probably a little bit dangerous. So most of us are herd animals or maybe natural stoics, but we still have to train and train us to feel a little bit more comfortable being on the outside.
Yeah, especially after at least a minimum of like 17 or 18 years of mandatory schooling.
Oh yeah, where you actually get scolded for being outside the box.
Yeah, so here are a couple of simple ways, like very simple practical tips that you can easily use in your life to do this. One example is to go where other people aren't. Like if you can enter a boat and everyone is going on one side, go on the other side, or at least see if you can do it. That's a good example. Another one is if you're on vacation, don't go to the popular places and tourist attractions, partly because everyone else is doing it and mostly because you don't have to stand in line if you go to less popular places.
Just remember, when you do these things, sometimes you will be right. Most of the times you probably will be wrong. Maybe you even miss the boat, or, well, your ticket isn't valid anymore, things like that. But that's part of the practice.
Yeah, I mean, the point is, it's so obvious now when we talk about it. But I mean, the whole point is that it doesn't come natural to think like that. It's counterintuitive. Another thing is to walk into like forbidden places.
Yeah, and walking in the middle of the road or the square rather than sticking to the sides and sneaking around the corners and along the walls.
Yeah, exactly. That's a really common social example, I think.
Yeah, and I just find it fun to walk in a way that isn't illegal and doesn't bother anybody, but just is different from whatever everybody else is doing.
Yeah, and you can also feel it feels a little bit wrong to do it, but it's not really wrong to do it. It's a strong correlation between overcoming amygdala slavery and being a contrarian.
The distinction here is that overcoming amygdala slavery, that's the definition is that you have to work on it and that it actually has to be hard, because that's the way you actually practice something. But if you're a true contrarian, then you're not really overcoming anything. Then you're actually just going with your instincts, and then it's not certain that it will lead you the right way.
To summarize, you need to practice it in the small things before you can do it in the big things. And when you do it in the small things, you can do it in the bigger things. And that's what we're going to talk about now. We're going to talk about how to outthink others with three different ways to differentiate your thinking.
All right, let's start with point number one.
And that is to learn and know things that other people don't. And the way that you do this is by having different inputs for information and stimulation, which means that you will think in different ways and you will have different emotions.
But that's really hard, because school teaches us to read the exact same books, to learn the exact same things and answer in the exact same way on tests. And society tells us that if a certain book or a TV show is popular, then you need to read that first before you're even allowed to read or watch something else. So if I get recommended the book Sapiens by 10 people and everybody says, oh, you haven't read it yet, then I'm almost compelled to read Sapiens first to even be allowed into the discourse, and then I can read other things.
Yeah, I think the really big point is that looking into the future, the more globalized and uniform that the media system becomes, the more important it becomes to read and learn things that other people aren't doing.
Look at the lists of what's popular and start by excluding those items, and then you look for interesting books and browse those. And then when you have time over, you could read what everybody else is reading.
That's really good advice, I think.
All right, moving on to point number two.
And that is to see things differently and or more broadly than others.
So the thing here is, so the trick is to try to come up with a bird's eye view and form a different mental model of what's actually going on than others are.
Yeah, so you can, if something is happening in the world, then you can interpret it in different ways than other people. And there's no really easy way to do that except by learning a lot and having experience and, you know, forming that unique viewpoint over a longer period of time.
Yeah. And finally, point number three, and that's to analyze information differently.
Yeah. And you could either do this with different methods than others, kind of going back to what we said in step number two with having a unique viewpoint, or you could use some other methods, you know. I mean, if you take the example of finance, people like to divide it up in styles, where it's like, okay, I do technical analysis, I do fundamental analysis. That would be an example of that. Those are like, you could say those are different methods, different ways of analyzing. So that's an example of that. Or analyzing information differently, you could do it better. You could do it the same as everyone else, but you could do it better than other people. And what I mean is you could do it faster or you could do it more rigorously. For example, Mikael always emphasizes to double check and do the math. That's a pretty fundamental example of that.
Yeah, so some people would instead stress the importance of getting a lot of ideas, as many ideas as possible, and then you can correct and discard those that turn out to be bad ideas. Whereas I like to minimize mistakes by always double checking, using checklists, going back to my best practices and so on, just to eliminate the downside. And then the upside, I let it take care of itself. Whereas others might emphasize getting all ideas in and trying to find that 10-bagger, the thing that will increase tenfold.
So to kind of summarize this episode, the more everyone else is learning the same things and doing sort of the same things, the more valuable, the higher the premium becomes on thinking and learning and doing differently from what the other people are doing.
Exactly. And the first step of getting there is to practice doing different things, just to make sure you don't become a slave to your amygdala and to your fears.
Yeah, and I really like the examples that we gave with first Stephenie Meyer with the Twilight series, where she broke the rules and became monstrously rich. And before that, she was just a receptionist. So she really, really came from nowhere and made it big. That's an interesting example. Real outlier, but still interesting. Maybe a better example is Arnold Schwarzenegger, who has used his skill as a contrarian and being, you know, differentiating from other people, both in his business and in thinking. He's taken this mindset from one area to the next in a really, like, masterful way. So that's maybe a better example to study.
And that brings us to the end of this episode. And I hope that our sound guy, Alexander Martin, is able to do his magic with the sound, as he always does. And for you who's listening, we encourage you to join our newsletter. There you can get episode summaries and learn good advice that is perhaps more succinctly summarized than in the episode.
Yeah, that's it for today.
Thank you for listening. Goodbye.